It certainly is a very exciting time in the field of immunology for dermatologists and oncologists with many new innovative treatments for malignancies. In this dialogue, Dr. Delphine J. Lee and Dialogues in Dermatology's immediate past editor-in-chief, Dr. Michael Girardi, lead us through these groundbreaking advances and provide us with an overview of tumor immunology.
So I'm Michael Girardi, and I have here today with me Dr. Delphine Lee, Professor and Director of the John Wayne Cancer Institute at St. John's Health Center in Los Angeles. And it's a distinct pleasure for me to be interviewing Dr. Lee on a topic that I think is very important for the practicing dermatologist to be aware of, and that is tumor immunology. So welcome, Delphine.
Thank you.
So Delphine, why don't we start off with why you think that this is a particularly important topic for the practicing dermatologist today?
Well, as a dermatologist and immunologist, I may be biased. I think the immune system is involved in pretty much every aspect of disease that we see. It's involved in cancer, in immune surveillance. We're employing the immune system to treat cancer, including precancers. And obviously, the immune system is involved in autoimmune and inflammatory conditions.
Yes, I think that our understanding of all the components of the immune system have reached at a level where we can actually employ a lot of new therapies and preventive measurements that can really empower the dermatologist today. Talk about the concept, because you said immune surveillance. Tell us what that means.
So the idea of immune surveillance is really the concept that the immune system is sort of like the police performing surveillance on all of our body, monitoring our cells and our tissues to ensure that all of them behave. So when you have cells that begin to change by mutating specific proteins or by altering their surfaces in different ways, the immune system is able to recognize those changes and eliminate those cells because they have somehow altered in a way that may be breaking the rules. There are a few physiologic examples of the fact that immune surveillance is indeed occurring physiologically, and one of those would be just the simple observation in transplant patients who are immune suppressed. We know that patients who have greater immune suppression come with more skin tumors, and you'll see this in typical dermatology practice, that our kidney transplant patients and our heart transplant patients all seem to have higher numbers of squamous cell carcinomas, basal cell carcinomas, and also melanomas.
So a lot of these patients are on systemic calcineurin inhibitors, right, including cyclosporin or tacrolimus. So what is it about that medication in particular that makes these patients so susceptible to cutaneous malignancies?
Well, I think the mechanisms by which those specific medications are acting and what pathways they target, we couldn't say specifically what the pathways are. But what we do know are general pathways that are important for anti-tumor immunity. So we know that of the T helper subsets, TH1 cells seem to be very important, and interferon gamma is very important. And we also know that natural killer cells may play a role in primarily animal models in protecting patients against developing tumors. Cyclosporin and tacrolimus can clearly affect T cells, and so one could conclude that that may be one of the pathways, but they are such general immune suppressants, it's hard to say specifically what they're doing.
So some of these calcineurin inhibitors also come in topical form, is that right?
That's correct.
And so are patients who are organ transplant recipients, do you recommend that they not use these topicals? Does that actually put them at an increased risk using them topically?
I don't think the evidence, and especially now that these topicals have been out for several years, I don't think we've seen an increased incidence of skin cancers in patients in general. So that's a very good question. It may be something to consider, but at the moment, I don't think we have enough data to say whether or not they should be avoided.
On the flip side of that, let's talk about topical agents that dermatologists might be able to use to fight skin cancer by empowering some of these components of the immune system that you talked about, T helper cells, and maybe also cytotoxic T cells of the CD8 phenotype. Can you talk about how we might empower those?
Topical imiquimod is an accepted therapy for an immune therapy in superficial basal cell cancers, and also off-label use in lentigo malignant melanoma and very superficial cancers. The mechanism by which topical imiquimod works is likely through activation of innate immune receptors, such as Toll-like receptor 7, and the activation of this receptor leads to the production of cytokines that may activate plasmacytoid dendritic cells. These are cells that are important in promoting the activation of T cells and then anti-tumor immunity.
So let me ask you, at the John Wayne Cancer Institute, have you employed any other strategies to try to really go after some of the more extensive cutaneous malignancies that might actually be metastatic?
Well, so there is in the NCCN guidelines intralesional therapy for patients who have cutaneous metastases that are not resectable. There are times when people have disease recurring only in the skin, and these are referred to as satellite metastases or in-transit metastases. And I've seen patients with hundreds of small nodules, papules on their skin. And one of the methods that is employed at John Wayne is the use of intralesional BCG. BCG is a mycobacterium that is used typically for two purposes. One is to vaccinate against TB, which is not used for that purpose in this country. And then also it's used to treat superficial bladder cancer in patients who have very early stages of disease. And it's used by instilling the bacteria into the bladder.
So is this live or killed or purified protein from the organism? What is that?
It is live bacteria. That's and BCG is an attenuated form of M. bovis. So it comes in a lyophilized form that's then reconstituted with saline. And the method using it for cutaneous metastases, typically patients should not have deep subcutaneous nodules, but superficial dermal nodules. And very low doses are used now to avoid abscesses and what's known as BCGosis, where patients may develop some infection from the bacteria itself.
So you're giving the patient, you're introducing a foreign antigen, microorganism, to try to really rev up the immune system to attack this foreign material? And then is the hope that some of this increased immune activity will kind of, by bystander effect, attack the cancer? Is that the principle?
Yes. So it's a really interesting therapy. And so what has been observed in the use of this therapy, and actually, as I said, it's been refined. So what's done now is patients are given a very low dose of the bacteria first in what they call a sensitization dose. And bacteria are injected in the axillary area and the inguinal area so that those antigens can drain to their draining lymph node basins. And then a few weeks later, they're given the intralesional injections, again, selecting for patients that don't have very deep subcutaneous nodules because it doesn't seem to be very effective for that case. And what occurs is a lot of times you have multiple lesions and you can't, it's just not feasible to inject all of them. So you'll inject some number of them, maybe 10 or maybe 20 of them. And what is observed is that the ones that are injected typically will regress. And that's probably, like you said, due to a bystander effect because you've got bacteria there with all of their pattern recognition ligands that will activate the innate immune system and then subsequently recruit in the adaptive response. And perhaps just that activation of the endothelial cells in those dermal lesions will recruit the CLA positive T cells that are needed to recognize the melanomas and kill them as well. There may also be other bystander mechanisms that we don't understand fully. But what's really interesting is that some percentage, a smaller percentage, of the uninjected lesions also have been observed to regress.
So kind of like the immune system's been woken up to start to recognize some of those tumor-specific antigens and start boosting that response?
Exactly.
So almost like an in vivo vaccination.
Exactly. That was exactly the idea.
Fascinating. So that's great stuff. So a lot of the immune cells communicate with each other through secreting chemicals called cytokines. And have we been able to use some of these cytokines, perhaps in recombinant form, in any kind of strategies to attack tumors and specifically malignancies?
Yes. So we've had in our tool bag for melanoma, specifically in the adjuvant setting, which refers to the fact that once a patient has had all of their disease removed and they no longer have any evidence of disease, but they may be high-risk patients, such as those who have deeper melanomas greater than 2 or 4 millimeters, or patients who have had nodal disease and the nodal disease has been removed. These patients are at high risk, and so the idea is to give them an immune stimulatory therapy that will provide them additional activation of their immune system so that they can have better immune surveillance to catch any of these last remaining cells that may be in them after their definitive surgery. And one of the cytokines that's used, actually the only cytokine FDA approved for adjuvant therapy, is interferon alpha. And there are two forms. There is interferon alpha, the recombinant cytokine, which is used at high doses. And then there is now pegylated interferon, which was approved a few years ago. And the pegylation allows, the polyethylene glycol allows the interferon alpha to be more stable so that lower doses can be used, and it's injected subcutaneously. And the general NCCN guidelines recommends this therapy for adjuvant therapy, and there is thought to be some survival advantage for patients who receive interferon, particularly in patients with ulcerated melanoma. And there are studies ongoing to test that idea to confirm that it is in fact true that patients with ulcerated melanoma may have a better survival benefit from adjuvant therapy using interferon.
So that's administered subcutaneously?
The pegylated form is administered subcutaneously. High dose form is given IV followed by subcutaneous doses.
So a lot of press is being given to what are called immune checkpoint inhibitors. And the breakthroughs that have occurred, particularly in the treatment of metastatic melanoma. Can you speak about what the concept is of immune checkpoint inhibitors and some of the specific therapies that have been derived from this concept?
Yes, immune checkpoint inhibitors refer to antibodies that bind molecules that are important for downregulating the immune response. They block these receptors from working. So a normal T cell response has to be turned off eventually. If you catch the flu and you feel terrible, the reason you feel terrible is because your immune system is fighting the flu, and all the cytokines that have been released to activate your immune system are really making you feel terrible, and you'll want to stay in bed. So once the flu is cleared, you don't want all those cytokines around. You don't want your T cells activated for prolonged periods of time. They need to eventually turn off. So there are physiologic pathways that are employed by the immune system to turn those T cells off. So when T cells are activated, sometime after, approximately 24 hours later, they upregulate receptors that will then compete for the receptors that activate them to turn the cells off. And those are these checkpoint inhibitor receptors. And one of them is CTLA-4, another is PD-1, and there are many others. But those are the two that are relevant given the current therapies that you're talking about.
So what are those therapies?
So the therapies, ipilimumab is an FDA-approved drug for treating metastatic melanoma, which blocks CTLA-4. CTLA-4 is upregulated on the T cell and competes with the activating receptor CD28, so that when it binds, it actually, and is activated, it turns the T cell off. By adding an antibody to CTLA-4, it prevents the CTLA-4 from competing for that receptor, which is known as B7-1 or 2, and then the T cell is able to continue to be activated because its checkpoint, this break to the immune system, has been removed. And then PD-1 is another receptor on T cells that recognizes PD-1 ligand, which has been shown to be expressed on the tumor. So you can see that the tumor has developed a method of evading the immune system, or of tricking the immune system and telling it, no, it's time to turn off by expressing PD-1 ligand because it can engage PD-1 on the T cell, telling the T cell, you've done your job, it's time to turn off now. And by adding an antibody to PD-1, it prevents that interaction so that the T cells continue to stay on and do their job to clear the tumor.
So in a way, these immune checkpoint inhibitors, they're removing the brakes on the immune system to let them to be maximally activated, but they're also attacking strategies on the tumor cell side. Did I hear that right?
What it's doing is it's acting on the T cell side, but there are drugs now that are in development and have also some studies that have been published on the tumor side where they block PD-1 ligand. However, those are still being investigated, as is anti-PD-1, which is not yet approved.
So are there strategies for more specific targeting, like through tumor vaccines in cancer? There hasn't been much approved in the way of cutaneous malignancies. I know that there is one product available for prostate cancer that tries to act through a specific immune-boosting mechanism, but tell us just conceptually how that might work in the future with a cancer vaccine for a skin malignancy.
So the general principles of vaccines are that you would provide the antigens that are relevant for clearing the tumor in the context of also some molecules that may activate the immune system. And these could be molecules such as those derived from microbes, which we have evolved to recognize. And upon recognition, our immune systems become activated, as well as including molecules that drive the immune system, such as cytokines, like you mentioned.
So can you talk to us about some of the more specific ways that we might be able to target the immune system in the future, perhaps with vaccines specifically against certain cancers?
Yes. So there are strategies that are being developed where a patient's own immune cells, such as the dendritic cells, are used, taken from the patient, and then pulsed with relevant tumor antigens. In melanoma, those would be molecules such as peptides from GP100 or MART1 or MAGE3. And then given these dendritic cells after being pulsed with the antigen are given back to the patient. Dendritic cells are very important cells in that they are responsible for providing the molecule of interest to the immune system, specifically to the T cell, and showing it that this is what you need to recognize, and amplifying those cells that actually do recognize so that you can in vivo grow that army of cells that are supposed to recognize it so that they can go and find the tumor and kill it.
So we're talking about a very complex relationship between cancer, cells of the immune system, cytokines, and so it's really kind of striking that balance therapeutically to empower the immune system. Tell us, are there any other strategies you've become exposed to and aware of at your institution?
There are a few other therapies. Actually, adoptive cell therapy is a therapy that's available at select centers across the United States and around the world, and John Wayne is developing that as well. Adoptive cell therapy refers to a treatment in which a patient's tumor cells, when the tumor is excised, the tumor is taken and cut into small pieces, and the T cells and other immune cells that are inside that tumor that have infiltrated into the tumor are allowed to grow out of that tumor in a petri dish. And then they are selected for based on their ability to produce interferon gamma, which I mentioned before, it's a cytokine that's thought to be very important in anti-tumor immunity. Once those T cells that recognize interferon gamma are selected, they're expanded to great numbers so that billions of cells are available. And this is a way to then grow up that army in vitro and in very sterile conditions and then given back to the patient. And this therapy has been shown to provide very good long-term durable responses. In addition to that, another immune therapy that's been around for a long time is IL-2. High-dose IL-2 can be given, again, to grow the army from within a patient in vivo, given to patients who have metastatic disease as a way. And those patients also, having been followed, some cohorts now for over 10 years, have shown very good, durable, long-term responses. If they were complete responders and if they survived beyond 18 months, they have a very good chance of a very long-term survival.
Let's try to summarize that for our listeners. So we started with the concept of immune surveillance and how dermatologists might be able to take advantage of some immune cells that might be able to attack precancers, actinic keratoses, basal cell carcinoma, specifically with the TLR7 agonist imiquimod topically. And with all the TLR receptors, we hope for more in the future. To be able to treat cancer with just creams would be very advantageous for a dermatologist. We also talked about cytokine therapies and how that can boost the immune system non-specifically, like IL-2, interferon alpha. We talked about immune checkpoint inhibitors, such as ipilimumab, which targets CTLA-4, and how that can release all the brakes on the immune system to attack cancer. And we talked about using BCG in protocols that might stimulate the immune system against a foreign microorganism, and that can be translated to activate the immune system specifically against a tumor. And also therapies that might come in the future using dendritic cell-based therapies and more specific tumor antigens in a tumor vaccine setting. So this is really an exciting time for our understanding of the immune system and how it's going to empower our ability to treat patients with skin cancer and other cancers. So what else would you like to add to kind of a summary that we have for our listeners?
Well, I think that the takeaways are that the immune system really is playing a role, even while you're sleeping, to monitor against any stray tumor cells that may be developing. One of the examples of this equilibrium where patients and their cancer cells may be actually able to coexist without causing disease in the patient actually comes from an example of a patient who had a melanoma, and she was cleared of that melanoma and then 15 years later died a sudden death and was then an organ donor. And this is a report actually in the New England Journal from years past, where the two recipients of the kidneys from this woman both actually subsequently developed melanoma with unknown primaries. And it just shows you that in that initial donor patient, her body was able to maintain her in check, and that even having some residual melanoma cells that were in her kidneys that were transplanted to the new recipients, those remained quiet in her, but when they were transferred to the new patients who then were immune suppressed in order to keep from rejecting their kidneys, these patients then had tumors then blossom from these kidneys. So really, the fact that we remain tumor-free really is in large part due to this immune surveillance that's occurring in our patients. And the mechanisms of immune recognition by our immune cells, we're able to understand more and more now that we've found effective therapies with cytokines and also possibly with the idea of dendritic cell vaccines and also these checkpoint inhibitors. So that the future is really looking much better for melanoma and other tumors now that we're understanding more about the mechanisms by which the immune system is able to eliminate tumor cells.
It's fascinating, Delphine. So I want to thank you for your tremendous insight and understanding of tumor immunology. And I think this was really exciting about what might be coming down in the hopefully near future. Thank you.
My pleasure.
The immune system has a well-established role in immune surveillance of malignant and premalignant cells, a tool now being used to the advantage of medical therapies. The concept of immune surveillance is that the immune cells can police or identify and affect clearance of cells which have changed from their original form in some way. For example, by recognizing and destroying these mutated cells, the immune system can effectively destroy cancer as it is created. A physiologic example seen in the clinical setting is immunosuppressed transplant patients who have a significant increase in the incidence of skin cancers, which is felt to be secondary to a lack of the modulating effect by immune surveillance. Systemic immunosuppressive agents often indiscriminately depress the immune system, but topical immunomodulators have been increasingly useful for a targeted approach of superficial skin cancers. Topical imiquimod is used in cases of superficial basal cell carcinoma and often in other off-label superficial skin cancers to activate the innate immune toll-like receptor 7, which produces cytokines that can activate plasmacytoid dendritic cells. These antigen-presenting dendritic cells are a key step in promoting activation of T cells, which start the anti-tumor attack. The use of intralesional BCG has also been utilized as a method of attracting the immune system to the site of a malignancy. BCG is composed of an attenuated form of Mycobacterium bovis, commonly known as a method of tuberculosis vaccination and as superficial bladder cancer treatment. Intralesional BCG has been applied in cases of non-resectable superficial dermal metastases. BCG is first introduced as a sensitization dose near a draining lymph node basin to begin the process of recognition of the bacterial antigens. After this initial step of cell-mediated immunity, the BCG is injected into cutaneous metastases so that the bacterial antigens will not only be recognized, but have a subset of T cells ready to attack the site of the BCG and the tumor. A secondary effect of this process is that the cancer antigens are presented while the bacterial antigens are attacked, and there is subsequent cell-mediated targeting of other non-injected metastases with some regression seen. This example of utilizing the body's own cell-mediated immunity against foreign material to destroy adjacent malignancies and alert immune surveillance to the presence of malignancies is an important tool in tumor immunology. Immune stimulatory therapy has been used in cases of adjuvant therapy for high-risk melanoma patients after surgical intervention. The idea is to keep the immune system on high alert, so immune surveillance may pick up on any remaining malignant cells after tumor excision. The cytokine interferon alpha has been used as a nonspecific immune stimulator in patients with ulcerated melanoma and has been shown to confer a significant survival benefit. There have also been advances in the use of antibodies designed to bind the molecules which downregulate or turn off the immune system, thereby having the effect of keeping the immune system on. These immune checkpoint inhibitors have been particularly useful in metastatic melanoma. For example, CTLA-4 is a receptor found on T cells, which competes with the activating T cell receptor CD28 for the ligands B7-1 and B7-2. CTLA-4 works as an off switch for the T cell, so when ipilimumab, a monoclonal antibody, is added to block the CTLA-4 receptor, the ligands are free to bind to the activating receptor CD28 and the immune system stays turned on. Essentially, the antibody blocks the brakes of the immune system so it stays revved up. There are also immune stimulatory strategies being developed to pulse relevant tumor antigens to a patient's extracted dendritic cells, which are then returned to the patient so a cell-mediated response may be cultivated. Adoptive cell therapy extracts the interferon gamma-producing T cells present in an excised tumor and expands them in vitro. The goal is to create a sort of army able to identify and destroy the tumor cells, then give them back to the patient to fight the cancer. Adoptive cell therapy has had promising results, with some long-term responses. There are many different ways to manipulate the immune system in order to create the desired effect on malignancies. However, there is still so much to learn. These therapies still need to be improved upon, and the right combination and sequencing of these tools must be established in order to utilize them to their greatest potential.